They ate food grown locally by farmers in soil that was naturally nutrient-rich, not enriched by man-made petrochemical products and chemically fertilized, and not imported by truck, boat, or plane across thousands of miles. Historically, the French didn't eat snack foods, junk foods, or fast foods. They ate healthy, monounsaturated oils from olive oil, nuts, and omega-3 fats from fish, as well as smaller amounts of saturated oils from cheese. They still eat many more vegetables than the average American, and these are rich in phytonutrients. They eat more beans and fresh fruit than we do, and they don't have to worry about the ingredients on the labels of the foods they eat because they don't eat many foods that require labels. A few generations ago, the food culture in the United States was more like this. My grandmother's nutritional advice was simple and powerful. Buy fresh, eat fresh. And I've extended the same sentiment to a saying of my own. If it has a label, don't eat it. The French also eat less food. They eat smaller portions. Beginning in the 1970s, there have been major changes in U.S. agricultural policy, especially the subsidization of corn production and farming. This has led to an overproduction of corn and an extra 500 calories available every day for every person in America, mostly in the form of high fructose corn syrup. We now have 3,800 calories available to each of us every day, almost double what the average woman needs to maintain her weight. Many of you might remember the time when a soft drink came in 6 and 8 ounce sizes. Now the average size is 20 ounces. Of course, the bottle clearly states that it is 2.5 servings. But who shares? We eat more because food producers add value by supersizing everything without regard to the consequences for our health or our waistline. The French, on the other hand, are accustomed to smaller portions. They don't deprive themselves, but they stay away from the gargantuan portion sizes Americans have become accustomed to. Another thing the French do is eat slow food. That is, they eat food more slowly, and they eat food that is absorbed more slowly, the real, whole, fresh foods mentioned earlier. Many Americans eat quickly, and we often eat when we are doing something else. Food is less associated with pleasure and often simply considered fuel for the body. We eat unconsciously, without many of the social and environmental cues that help us relax, digest, and metabolize our food. What we have lost and what the French maintain are the social aspects of the meal, eating with family and friends in a relaxed atmosphere. In other words, the pleasure that you experience when you eat food is also important to your metabolism. We need to be in a relaxed state for the nervous system of our gut or our digestive system to work properly. Eating while we are stressed makes us fat, both because we don't digest our food properly and because stress hormones slow metabolism and promote fat storage, especially belly fat. We also tend to overeat when we eat quickly because it takes the stomach 20 minutes to signal the brain that we're full. Our final comparison with the French food habits is walking. You know, when was the last time you walked to the store to buy your groceries? One of the charms of a French town is that you can walk everywhere. Most were built long before the automobile and were designed on a human scale where everything is close enough to walk to. In fact, the roads in a great many European towns are too small for cars. In contrast, American suburbs and living communities were generally created for cars, not people. So we have never acquired the habit of strolling. Walking to the store to buy your food or going for a stroll after you eat means that you are exercising more, burning off the calories you consume. This is a great way to stay fit, and one that America has divorced itself from in the creation of urban sprawl. There's some important lessons Americans can learn from the French about food, but they're not to eat more saturated fat and drink more alcohol. We simply need to eat real food, eat smaller portions, eat more slowly, eat with pleasure, and walk after dinner. If you do so, you'll feel more satisfied, less hungry, better nourished, and you will lose weight and improve your metabolism. The last of the seven myths is the protector myth. Government policies and food industry regulations protect our health. Alice had three children between the ages of 8 and 12, each with his or her own after-school schedule, violin lessons, art class, soccer, Irish step dancing, and she found she spent more time in her minivan than in her house, and certainly more time there than in her kitchen. She'd become a drive-by eater, as had her children. They eat meals together in the minivan often, and only rarely around the dinner table. Even when they did eat at the table, it was often pizza or takeout subs. Thank heaven, she said, there were fast food restaurants at every corner. She was not alone. 30% of Americans eat at least one meal in their car every week, and one in five breakfasts eaten in America is a McDonald's breakfast. Slowly, and then a little more quickly, the pounds started coming on. Her children also started gaining weight. The abundance and convenience of poor quality food, lacking in nutrients, but high in sugar, calories, and trans fats, was not worth the trade-off. But with her busy schedule, she didn't know any alternative. In fact, there's hardly anywhere to find a quick and convenient food that isn't harmful. But as we worked together, she learned how to shop and quickly prepare real whole food snacks and meals that she could take with her and feed her children with. And I gently suggested that she wouldn't be a bad mother if her kids didn't do every activity, and that there was value in staying home as a family, preparing meals, and slowing down. Junk in, junk out, I told her, and she listened. Not completely, and not right away, but she found that with a little planning, she could start eating real food every day and was able to lose her minivan pounds. At the beginning of the 20th century, Americans cooked and ate most of their meals at home. By the year 2000, they ate more than half their meals outside the home or ate processed food they didn't cook at home. This is not an accident or an unintentional result of busy lives or the breakdown of the family unit. It has been an intentional transformation of the nutritional landscape by an industry spending phenomenal resources to market inexpensive food of poor nutritional quality to more and more people, regardless of the effect on their health or their waistlines. I live in a small rural town in Massachusetts, and there are five McDonald's within 10 miles of my house. How can we win the Battle of the Bulge with more than 13,000 McDonald's in the United States alone? The food industry generates more than $1 trillion in annual sales and accounts for 12% of the U.S. gross national product. It employs 17% of the country's labor force. It also spends more than $33 billion a year on marketing alone. 70% of those dollars go to pushing fast food, convenience food, snack food, soft drinks, alcoholic beverages, and dessert. Only 2.2% of those marketing dollars are spent on advertising fruit, vegetables, grains, or beans. Meanwhile, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the government agency responsible for food policy, spends only $300 million a year on nutrition education, which mostly goes to research or agricultural extension products that reach few people. And oddly enough, the same government that can't find money to fund public health campaigns that promote the scientific principles of good nutrition could increase agricultural subsidies from $18 billion in 1996 to $28 billion in the year 2000. The USDA committee responsible for setting our dietary recommendations is populated by many experts, quote-unquote, who work for the food industry, hardly an objective scientific body. The Department of Health and Human Services should be the guardian of our health. The current system is like putting the drug companies in charge of the Food and Drug Administration, or the FDA, and letting them set drug policies and approve new drugs. The food industry is pushing us face forward into the overconsumption of foods that trigger weight gain, obesity, and all the known causes of aging, including heart disease, diabetes, stroke, cancer, and Alzheimer's disease. These conditions are not the inevitable result of aging. They are related to the quality of our diet. The recent cheeseburger bill passed in Congress prohibits lawsuits against the food industry for making us fat or sick. Why create a law to protect the food industry when the government is entrusted to protect citizens? A recent study of the causes of death in the United States found that poor diet and physical inactivity contribute to approximately 400,000 deaths annually, a one-third increase from 1990, and almost as many deaths as those caused by smoking. Obesity will soon overtake smoking as the leading cause of all deaths in the United States. Don't you think this recent rise in eating-related health disorders is due at least in part to the advertising dollars major food companies put into convincing us to eat low-quality food items? Apparently, the U.S. Congress doesn't. What we're eating now is not really food. The food industry is promoting food, quote-unquote, that does not turn on genes that promote health and optimal metabolism. Lauren Cordain, PhD from the Department of Health and Exercise Physiology at Colorado State University, in his remarkable article, The Origins and Evolution of the Western Diet, Health Implications for the 21st Century, outlines just how far we have come from the diet we were evolved to eat and to which our genes are well adapted. This diet has changed dramatically in 10,000 years since the agricultural revolution, but our genes have changed very little. You know, our original diet had seven characteristics, none of which applies to our modern diet. One, a low glycemic load, that's low in sugar and refined carbohydrates. Two, more omega-3 fats from wild foods such as fish, wild game, and wild plants. Three, a balance of protein, fat, and slowly absorbed carbohydrates. Four, an abundance of vitamins and minerals. Five, many alkaline plant foods which prevent our blood from becoming too acidic. Six, a low level of sodium or salt. And seven, a high fiber content. We would do very well to reacquaint ourselves with the diet to which our bodies are best adapted. This is what our bodies thrive on, the diet of our hunting and gathering ancestors, not the diet of the drive-through fast food windows and the candy shelves of the local 7-Eleven. The food we eat now is chemically altered to promote shelf life and increase consumption, not good health. There are two major ingredients in most of the prepared foods you eat, corn and soy. They're vegetables, you know, so what could be bad about that? The problem is that the corn and soy are transformed in the laboratory into toxic foods, unknown to human biology, when they are turned into super sugars and super fats, known as high fructose corn syrup and hydrogenated soybean oil. These two man-made chemicals have absolutely no nutritional value, and they are found in almost every processed or packaged food you consume these days. High fructose corn syrup is used to sweeten almost everything these days, including soft drinks. These super sugars quickly enter your bloodstream and trigger hormonal and chemical changes that make you feel even hungrier. Hydrogenated oil is used to preserve everything from cookies to crackers to salad dressings. It's in almost every package of food you pick up on your supermarket shelf because it's the primary agent that allows food to be stored on the shelf in the first place. It's a universal danger and incredibly hazardous to your health. These trans fats bind to a spot in your cells that block your metabolism, slows fat burning, increases cholesterol, and leads to insulin resistance or trouble balancing your blood sugar. This leads not only to weight gain, but to every other major health concern. These issues don't seem to concern the food industry. They continue to use these deadly products in every food they create, despite the scientific evidence that tells us they are deadly. How can Americans find food that will nourish them, promote optimal health, and support a well-functioning metabolism in this vast nutritional wasteland? How can they find good food when our government spends tens of billions of dollars to subsidize the production of toxic foods, and the food industry spends more than $30 billion annually to develop and market them? The unfortunate truth is that government policy is closely tied to industry. The ill-conceived 1992 food pyramid developed by the USDA, the same organization whose mission is to promote and support agriculture, was based on weak science and strong commercial interests. It advocated the consumption of 6 to 11 servings of bread, rice, cereal, and pasta, and told us to eat fat sparingly. We have now learned that this is the prescription for insulin resistance, weight gain, and disease. The scientists who developed it were affiliated with the food industry, as opposed to independent university or medical researchers who might have had a more objective point of view. The food pyramid became the basis of the school lunch program, hospital food programs, nursing home programs, and all federally funded institutions that serve food. Our government told us to eat a diet that serves business, not health, a diet that makes us sick. This was followed up by a revised set of food guidelines introduced in 2005, but these are only a mild improvement. Rather than educating us about the dangers of refined carbohydrates and sugars, they meekly advise us to choose carbohydrates wisely. The new food pyramid, while an improvement, is still controlled by industry influence. So what can you do? Clearly, government food policy needs to change, but that could take a long time if it happens at all. You need to change ways you eat right now so that you can start losing weight and feeling better today. Ultrametabolism and its 7 keys to the new science of healthy weight will teach you how to make the best eating choices and lifestyle decisions despite the misinformation provided by the government and the food industry. It will empower you with the information you need to change your health and your life right now. There are 7 keys to the new science of weight loss. These keys work together to open the door to vitality, good health, and successful long-term weight loss, and none requires taking drugs. The first is to control your appetite and metabolism by understanding how the brain, the gut, and your fat cells communicate with one another through hormones and brain messenger chemicals called neuropeptides to drive your eating behavior. The second key is to understand how stress makes you fat and how to overcome its effects. The third key is to control inflammation, a hidden force behind weight gain and disease. The fourth key is to prevent cellular rust, which interferes with metabolism and causes inflammation. The fifth key is to learn how to turbocharge your metabolic engine to turn calories into energy more efficiently. The sixth key is to make sure your thyroid, the master metabolism hormone, is working optimally. And the seventh key is to detoxify your liver so it will properly metabolize sugars and fats and eliminate toxins and toxic weight. Understanding these 7 keys is critical to long-term, sustainable weight loss that doesn't depend on deprivation or punishment, but is based on nourishing and caring for your body. While one weight loss guru or another might emphasize any one of these elements, these 7 factors have never before been integrated into a complete, comprehensive program. Some of these concepts, such as inflammation and oxidative stress, have never before been identified as keys to weight loss. Ultrametabolism provides a view of the entire landscape of how to achieve and maintain a healthy weight. Armed with the latest information science has to offer, we can take back our health and find that fit person inside waiting to come out. Working with our bodies instead of against them, we can learn to stop acting in a way that triggers a flood of molecules, sweeping us down a slippery road of survival behavior designed to make us store fat. That's the promise of ultrametabolism. Don't you wish you'd come with a little instruction book, perhaps strapped to your leg as you emerge from the birth canal? You know, wouldn't it be wonderful if it contained all the directions for what you should eat, how much you need to exercise, whether you require more protein or fat, or whether you should absolutely never eat sugar, or why you need twice as much vitamin C as your next door neighbor? The science of medicine is advancing very rapidly, particularly in the new era of genomics. And soon we will be able to provide the answers to most of these questions. Right now, we're going to explore some of the new vistas in medicine as they apply to weight regulation and obesity. These are the 7 keys needed to open the door to the new science of weight loss. Each of them is important and all interact. However, in some individuals, one or more of these principles predominate. Understanding them will help you succeed in managing not only your weight, but also your long-term health and well-being. They are the keys to reversing disease, being free of chronic symptoms, and creating optimal health. Not only will you experience effortless weight loss and create a healthy metabolism, but you'll also address the underlying causes of chronic disease. The consequence of these changes will mean a new feeling of life and energy. Everyone needs to discover his or her own instruction manual. And the best way to do this is to use the quizzes that you'll find on the text portion of CD4. I'll direct you to each quiz as we come to it. Combining these with the steps you'll learn as we go along will guide you in personalizing ultrametabolism for yourself. Making subtle changes in your lifestyle, in meal composition, meal timing, and the quality of the food you eat, exercising moderately, taking supplements that support your metabolism, using saunas, and stress management can have a powerful and dramatic effect on your weight and your overall health with very little effort. These principles will help you stop the seesaw of weight gain and loss that comes from an imbalanced metabolism. When you are in balance, the body takes care of itself. The ultrametabolism prescription is the basis of getting the right instructions to your genes. However, we are not all the same, and many people have undiagnosed medical problems. Such problems can be identified in each of the keys. Maybe you have trouble controlling your appetite and have a low-functioning thyroid or are very stressed. Using the quizzes and the steps in each key will help you personalize the program and overcome these problems. If you find you have problems in more than one key, and for each key you can score low, moderate, or high, you can combine suggestions from different chapters. Because the body is a unified system, similar suggestions are found in multiple chapters. For example, to eat whole foods, or exercise, or relax, or take similar supplements. This is actually good news. The body is designed to have all systems function when given specific health-supporting inputs, the right food, movement, nutrients, and so on. Therefore, it will be easier than you think to combine the approaches to problems identified in different chapters because many of the recommendations are the same. You won't have to eat twice as many whole foods, relax twice as much, or double dose on supplements and herbs. Finally, keep in mind that in some cases, the health problems you face may be aided by taking some additional tests. You may also need to seek professional medical help. If you score high on any of the quizzes, you will see that I recommend that you do just this. This doesn't necessarily mean that you're having a health emergency, but it does mean that you should very seriously consider seeing a doctor who can help you test for the conditions I discuss here and help you implement the program in it. You'll find detailed information on my website, www.ultrametabolism.com/tests, about where you can get additional tests. In some cases, you can order the test for yourself online, and you can learn about the best laboratories to do the test and find a physician qualified to help you with your problems. We are all genetically and biochemically unique. Ultrametabolism will help you identify the hidden keys to your metabolism and turn on the genes that will make you healthy and fit. Using this approach, you can create a personalized program on a foundation of scientifically based, sound nutritional principles. You will also be given the tools to navigate further into your own story using quizzes and suggestions for special testing. The result will be the creation of an ultra metabolism, yours. I was invited to the Time ABC Summit on Obesity in 2004, a gathering of the greatest minds in science, industry, government, and the media, and even all the weight loss gurus, Dean Ornish, Barry Sears, Andrew Weil, Arthur Agustin, and even a representative from Atkins, the Surgeon General, the Secretary of Health and Human Services, Peter Jennings, and many other notables were present. We discussed science and theory and politics and strategy for 3 days, but nothing had a greater impression on me than the taxi ride from the airport, which I shared with two others, one a lawyer and a lobbyist representing the food industry, and the other a weight loss doctor who had once weighed more than 400 pounds. Of course, I couldn't help but comment on how the food landscape of the average American town provided a toxic eating environment. Fast foods and convenience stores at every turn. I complained that the 64-ounce supersized sodas and refined starches that were so accessible simply fueled food cravings and the obesity epidemic. The lawyer for the food industry disagreed. "It's all a matter of personal choice," she said. "You can just say no." She was thin. The quiet and mildly overweight doctor in his mid-50s in the front seat finally jumped in. He recounted his own long struggle with weight. During residency, he had lived on coffee and sugar to enable himself to work the grueling hours typical of medical education. He had ballooned to more than 300 pounds. He experimented with every diet imaginable. Atkins, Jenny Craig, SlimFast, Nutrisystem, protein shakes for a year, even HCG, which is a placental hormone, and many more things. He had finally resorted to gastric bypass when he yo-yoed back up past 400 pounds. After the surgery, he quickly lost about 80 pounds, but then he figured out that even though he couldn't eat a lot at once, he could satisfy his cravings by eating M&Ms one after the other. He gained back every pound that he'd lost after the operation. He described the feeling of an insatiable hunger and craving always gnawing at him. Then one day came Fen-Phen, one of the first pharmaceutical appetite suppressants. He tried it, and suddenly he said it was as if a switch had been turned off in his brain. He wasn't hungry anymore. It was at that moment he realized that his drive to eat was hormonal or chemical in origin. But as he found out, drugs are not a solution to weight loss. When the dangers of Fen-Phen came to light, because it was eventually shown to cause heart disease, he stopped. But he learned to use food as his medicine, rather than his poison. He was able to control his appetite, lose weight, and keep it off without the drugs by controlling his appetite to careful use of meal timing and meal composition. Though I never treated him as a patient, it is one of the most remarkable examples of the power of the gut-brain-fat cell connection. Getting the signals mixed will lead to misery. Getting them right will lead to good health and weight loss. Here's the first of the seven keys to the new science of weight loss. Control your appetite by harnessing your brain chemistry for weight loss. You know, have you ever wondered how your body controls your weight? How does your body know when to eat and when to stop eating? What happens inside your body to tell you you're hungry or full? The answer to each of these questions is your appetite control system, a complex set of chemical interactions among your brain, nervous system, metabolic hormones, special fat cells, and the immune system. I call this the gut-brain-fat cell connection. These chemical interchanges tell you whether or not you need food and compel you to eat. When they're working properly, they're an elegant machine that pinpoints when you need energy and asks you to consume calories to get that energy. But when they go haywire, and there are many ways for them to go haywire in our current food climate, they cause you to eat when you don't need to, which not only leads to weight gain, but contributes to almost every other health problem we face. Appetite control is as tightly regulated as your heartbeat or breathing. Imagine the effects of eating just 100 extra calories a day over the course of a year. You know, every 3,500 calories is equal to about 1 pound of fat. Over the course of a year, the average person eats 900,000 calories. So if you exceeded your needs by just 2%, or 18,000 calories, you would gain 5 pounds by the end of the year. The average American gains 20 pounds between the ages of 25 and 55. This is due to an excess of only 0.3% of calories per year over 30 years. This incredibly small difference leads to significant weight gain over time. So one of the major reasons the average American gains this weight is that their appetite control system is out of balance. The chemical interactions among the various systems in the body that tell them when they are hungry have been disrupted. So I'm going to tell you how to rebalance and then fine-tune that system. I will show you how your appetite control system works and what you can do to repair and optimize it. Doing this is the first step to creating ultra-metabolism in your body. Before we dive into your appetite, I'd like you to pause the program and go to the text files on CD4. Find the file titled Appetite Quiz. Take the quiz called How Good Is Your Gut-Brain-Fat Cell Communication? This will help you see if you're currently having problems regulating the amount you eat. Along with the quiz, you'll find simple instructions on how to score it that will apply to all the quizzes. When you've completed and scored the quiz, come back and join me here. Let's take a look now at your appetite control system. It has four basic parts. There are 1, the wiring of your nervous system, the automatic or autonomic nervous system or wiring that connects the brain, the gut, and your fat cells. 2, your weight control hormones. These are metabolic hormones, including hormones and molecules made by your fat cells. 3, your command central messengers. These are the brain messenger chemicals called neuropeptides. And 4, molecules of inflammation. These are messenger molecules of the immune system called cytokines, and they're produced in the fat cells as well as white blood cells and liver cells that have wide-ranging effects on your health and metabolism. These components work together to communicate among all the organs and tissues responsible for managing your weight and keeping you alive. Their signals flow among your stomach, your intestines, liver, pancreas, fat cells, hormone system, brain, and autonomic nervous system. Good communication equals a healthy metabolism. The key to controlling your appetite is learning how to create harmony among all the parts of your metabolism that make up your appetite regulation system. Molecules that communicate with your nervous system control your appetite, your food intake, and how you metabolize that food. We are learning more every day about how these molecules communicate. They have many names and they come in many different forms from many different places in the body, and there are a few master metabolism hormones. But no matter how big or how small, they all work together to create an intricate web that is your metabolism. These molecules are everywhere in your body and are produced by many different systems, but the main centers of activity are the brain, the gut, and the fat cells. The molecules produced by these cells are hormones, neurotransmitters, and cytokines. Hormones are the messenger molecules of the endocrine system, including your fat cells. Neurotransmitters are the messenger molecules of the nervous system. And cytokines are the messenger molecules of the immune system, also including your fat cells. There are other systems in the body that have the ability to produce these messenger molecules as well, but these are the main places they come from. When your stomach is empty, it secretes hormones that tell your body and brain you're hungry. Your brain then prepares the stomach to receive something good, sort of similar to Pavlov's dogs salivating at the sound of the bell. You even begin to secrete insulin just thinking about food. And when you eat, the food enters the stomach and the gut and releases yet even more hormones, preparing it for digestion. As the food makes its way into your bloodstream, more messages coordinate your metabolism, telling your pancreas to produce more insulin. Then your fat cells in turn send hormonal messages back to your brain to stop eating, along with signals from your stomach that you're full. Your liver then processes the fat and sugar and helps coordinate storage and burning. The entire process occurs invisibly, without the slightest awareness on your part. When this process of communication is out of balance, it wreaks havoc on your system. You get hungry after you've just eaten. You store fat when you should burn it, and your body starts ignoring the normal control signals for appetite and metabolism. And the result is weight gain and disease. Yet you can directly influence the complex melodies of your hormonal system and your appetite control system by following these 6 steps. Number 1. Compose the perfect meals. Number 2, eat early and eat often. Number 3, enjoy foods that control your appetite and avoid foods that send it out of control. And step 4, use herbs that optimize your hormonal balance. 5, use supplements that control your appetite and balance the brain, fat, gut cell communication. And lastly, 6, consider testing to find the causes of an appetite that is out of control. So let's look at exactly how you can make this 6-step process work for you. Step 1. Compose the perfect meals. What you put inside your body is important. Indeed, the saying, "You are what you eat," is completely true. The problem is that we've been convinced that we should be eating a low-fat, low-carb, low-calorie diet, and none of these things is true. What you really need to focus on is the types of food you consume, the quality of the food you consume, and the way you balance the various kinds of food you eat. The single most important thing to keep in mind when you're building your personal menus is to include as many real, whole, unprocessed foods in your diet as possible. So here's a few examples of what I'm talking about. Whole fruit, not canned fruit or fruit juices. Whole vegetables, not canned vegetables. Wild fish, not farm fish. Whole grains, not processed wheat. Grass-fed beef, not feedlot beef. Nuts and seeds and legumes or beans, but not fried or salted. If you start doing this right now, you will feel your health improve, your energy change, you will control your appetite, and you will start losing weight. Next, eat the right fats. You know, as we discussed earlier, eating the right kinds of fat is important if you want to turn on the genes that help you lose weight and turn off the ones that cause you to gain weight. This has been proven in study after study. Fats are one of the key parts of our diet that control our genes, our weight, and inflammation. Fats provide satisfying, slowly absorbed energy that makes you full faster and keeps you feeling full longer. And more importantly, healthy fats in your meals help you lower the overall glycemic load of the meal by mixing with all the rest of the food in your gut and allowing it to be absorbed more slowly even before it hits your bloodstream. Next, balance your glycemic load. Remember, carbs are probably the single most important food in your diet, but we aren't built to eat the highly processed carbs that are so dominant in our society today. Learning to compose the perfect meals means knowing which carbs you should eat and which ones you should stay away from. Choosing a diet that has a low glycemic load and is rich in phytonutrients is an important way to control both your appetite and your weight. And there are really 3 simple parts to doing this. 1, eat more fiber, which by the way comes from plant foods. 2, avoid sugar. And 3, stay away from this super sugar, high fructose corn syrup. Fiber is the secret key to a low glycemic load. It's like a sponge that soaks up sugar, thus making it burn more slowly in your digestive system. Like anything else, you want to balance the fiber in your diet. I don't recommend that you add wool pulp to your diet as a supplement, but increasing your fiber intake is one important way that you can lower your glycemic load and control your appetite. It will help you create metabolic balance that allows your body to function in the most efficient manner possible. The fiber factor is an important aspect of long-term weight loss, and fiber is easy to find. It's in all unprocessed, unrefined, whole plant foods, such as beans, whole grains, nuts, seeds, fruits, and vegetables. Part 2 in the quest to balance your glycemic load: avoid sugar at all costs. Refined carbohydrates and sugars are ever present in our diet. White bread, sugar, pasta, white rice, and white potatoes are all quickly absorbed starches with a high glycemic load that convert to sugar in our body at a very rapid rate. Soft drinks or sugar-sweetened beverages and alcohol consumed in excess contribute to the problem with our excessive consumption of sugar as well. Read food labels carefully to identify sugar in other disguises. Sugar is sugar by any other name. For example, watch out for corn syrup and high fructose corn syrup. Sucrose, glucose, maltose, dextrose, lactose, fructose, white grape juice or other fruit concentrate, honey, barley malt, maple sugar, sucanut, natural cane sugar, dehydrated cane juice, brown sugar, turbinado sugar, and invert sugar. Food processors do not have to state if there's added sugar in their products. Added sugar is defined as an additional sweetener or sugar put into food other than what's naturally found in it. For example, high fructose corn syrup is often added to fruit drinks. The manufacturer is required only to list the total grams of sugar. So be careful of hidden sugars in the following items: breakfast cereals, salad dressings, luncheon meats, canned fruits, bread, peanut butter, crackers, soups, sausage, yogurt, relish, cheese dips, chewing gum, jellies and jams, and frozen desserts like ice cream, sorbets, or yogurts. You don't have to avoid these items entirely. You just want to be very wary of them. Remember to read food labels carefully. If you are worried that there may be hidden sugars in certain foods, do some research or look for an alternative that you might enjoy just as much. Healthier versions of these foods without high fructose corn syrup, trans fats, or added chemicals are available at whole food stores such as Whole Foods or Wild Oats. In particular, stay away from this super sugar, high fructose corn syrup. It is one of the unspoken dangers of our food supply, an ingredient of almost every sweetened processed food that many Americans consume every day, such as sodas, canned foods, cookies, cakes, baked goods, and frozen foods. Steer clear of artificial sweeteners like aspartame or NutraSweet, Neotame, acesulfame, potassium, saccharin, sucralose, and many others are artificial sweeteners consumed by 2/3 of the adult population and are a significant component of our diets. There are many packaged foods, artificially sweetened foods, gum, candy, sodas, drinks, and mints. Read the labels and look for those names. A number of studies have shown that aspartame ingestion may actually lead to increased food intake and calorie intake. This is likely because artificial sweeteners make your body produce insulin by making it think sugar is on the way. As a consequence, your body tells you to eat more sugar to balance your insulin level. Artificial sweeteners do nothing to help in this regard. They do not act as sugar does, and they do not balance your insulin. As a result, you end up with excess insulin in your body, so you end up eating more food to take care of this problem. This whole pattern disrupts your appetite control system in serious ways. What's worse, it can lead to insulin resistance, which has many serious health consequences. Now that we have addressed the major issues that revolve around your meal composition, let's turn our attention to the frequency and timing of the meals you eat. That's step 2. Eat early and eat often. Not only is the composition of the meal you eat critical, but when you eat and how often you eat are essential in regulating your weight. Studies have shown that eating regular meals throughout the day, grazing versus gorging, and not skipping meals improves your chances of losing weight and reduces many risk factors for heart disease, diabetes, and aging in general. If you eat in a regular rhythmic pattern at roughly the same time every day, you will eat less, burn more fat, and lower your cholesterol and insulin levels. To achieve this, you'll need to eat frequently, probably more frequently than you're accustomed to. I recommend eating 3 meals and maybe 1 or 2 snacks a day. If that seems like a lot to you, don't worry. When you eat this often, the portions of the food you eat will be naturally smaller. Your metabolism will be functioning better, so you will feel less hungry and thus eat less. In addition, if you eat regular meals, you'll heat up your metabolic fire and burn more calories after eating. This occurs naturally through what is known as thermogenesis, literally heat creation, as a series of physiological processes kicked into gear to digest what you've eaten and turn into energy you can use. Eating erratically, or eating on the go, or away from home, or at your desk, or whenever your hectic schedule permits, will lead you down a path to constant hunger, greater food consumption, inefficient energy production, low energy levels, weight gain, and obesity. The old proverb, "Eat breakfast like a king, lunch like a prince, and supper like a pauper," now has some scientific muscle behind it. Many of us think that if we skip breakfast, we will reduce our overall calorie intake for the day and lose weight. Unfortunately, the opposite is true. Studies show that not eating breakfast means you will eat more the rest of the day. Eating breakfast is just that, breaking the overnight fast. Eating upon waking brings your blood sugar levels back to normal, kickstarts your metabolism, and sets you up to be in an even metabolic keel for the rest of the day. So break your fast every morning. It will make you healthier, give you more energy throughout the day, and help you lose weight. Step 3. Enjoy foods that control your appetite and avoid foods that send it out of control. To help you create harmony in your hormones, turn on genes that make you lose weight, and control your appetite, you'll want to concentrate on including whole unprocessed foods that have good fats, a low glycemic load, and a high phytonutrient index. A list of specific foods is found in the text files of CD4. The file is called Whole Food Principles. So to keep your appetite in balance, there are also some foods that you need to avoid whenever possible. And these include the hydrogenated oils, refined vegetable oils, sugar, artificial sweeteners, high fructose corn syrup, flour products, refined grains, junk food, fast food, and processed foods. Step 4. Use herbs to optimize your hormonal balance. You know, certain herbs have been shown to have an impact on appetite control. You may want to include the following herbal remedies in your program. Each of them has the potential to control your appetite, and many of them can be easily used in the recipes that are on the Ultra Metabolism website and the text portion of CD4. Some of the most helpful herbs are ginseng, green tea, fenugreek, and cinnamon. Step 5. Use supplements to control your appetite and balance the brain-fat-gut-cell communication. The following supplements have been shown to help with appetite control. If you still have problems with this element of your weight loss program after instituting the earlier parts of the protocol, you might consider adding these supplements to your basic daily regimen. Alpha-lipoic acid is a powerful antioxidant that improves glucose metabolism. Gamma-linolenic acid, or GLA, is found in evening primrose oil, which also helps your metabolism. And PGX, or polyglycoplex, or konjac root fiber, has special fibers that absorb sugar and fat in the gut and can help with weight loss and metabolism. Step 6. Consider testing to find the causes of an appetite that is out of control. If you score to the moderate to high range on the gut-brain fat cell quiz, you should seriously consider following up with additional testing that can help you confirm what your problems with appetite control might be and pinpoint what you need to do to change your condition. You should also seek professional medical help if you scored particularly high on the quiz. In the text files of CD4, you'll find a list titled Basic Tests, and you can also find more information on advanced tests at www.ultrametabolism.com. The second of the 7 keys is to subdue stress. Let's explore how stress makes you fat and relaxing makes you thin. You know, Esther was an artist. She loved life. She moved gracefully through it. Her children were her greatest passion, all beautiful and grown and smart and loving. You know, nearly 65, she never struggled with her weight. Never much for formal exercise. She walked, she gardened, she danced, you know. And then one of her daughters moved to Israel during a time of particularly heated Palestinian-Israeli conflict. She began to watch CNN day and night, waiting and anxious and expectant. Would her daughter be safe? Was the latest cafe bombing or suicide bomber in her daughter's neighborhood? You know, this went on for months and months, despite attempts by her family to distract her. Her daughter would call and reassure her that she was happy and safe, but this did very little to settle her anxiety. Her stress multiplied by the day, and so did her dress size. She gained 35 pounds watching CNN. While the hours of television watched are directly correlated with weight gain for everybody, in Esther's case, it was compounded by the state of alarm washing over her nervous system. It was as if she were living in a war zone herself, and the hormones she produced while she was stressed made her gain more and more weight. She didn't need to exercise more or change her diet. She needed to massage her nervous system to quiet the molecules of alarm making her gain weight. She needed only to remove one thing from her diet, CNN. Once her daughter returned from Israel, her weight returned to normal. Imagine you're a rat immobilized by wires in a cage. You're completely stressed out. You're tied down in this cage, scared for your life. As a consequence, your body has triggered a special state of alarm, the primitive fight or flight response, where all the molecules that scream danger to your body are flooding into your bloodstream. Your breathing increases, your blood pressure goes up, oxygen shifts from the upper part of your body to your lower sectors, preparing you to run. Your adrenal glands release adrenaline and cortisol, which are the stress hormones, right into your bloodstream, causing a chain of events to occur. This response also happens to increase blood fat, sugar, and insulin levels, preparing you for increased energy needs. Studies of this nature have been done on lab rats, and you won't be surprised that the chain of events I just described is exactly what happens. The truly shocking finding, however, is that what has been shown to happen to the weight of the poor rats that were tied down, without any increase in calorie intake, actually they ate less, or decrease in energy expenditure, they gained weight. They actually expended more energy by struggling to get free. So they ate less, they exercised more, and they gained weight. That's right, they gained weight from stress alone. Humans experience a similar fight-or-flight stress response. We have all felt that sudden rush in a moment of terror. The problem for humans is that we often feel stress, triggering this exact set of responses in our body, even when we aren't in real danger. Because our psychology is vastly more complex than a rat's, we often feel stressed out about things that ultimately have very little impact on our physical safety. So chronically high levels of these stress hormones circulating in the body have detrimental effects on humans similar to those seen in cage rats. This connection between stress and impaired metabolism is not well appreciated by doctors or the general public and is a recent breakthrough in scientific research. The recognition that stress can lead to weight gain might be enough to make you jump off a cliff. How can you eat less, exercise more, and still gain weight? If stress can make you gain weight, you're going to have to learn to relax. Before we can learn more about how and why to relax, let's have a look at how much stress you're coping with right now and whether it's preventing you from losing weight. In the text files of CD4, you'll find a file titled Stress Quiz. Take the quiz called How is the Stress Response Affecting You? Pause the audio now, take this brief quiz, score it, and then join me back here. Now that you've identified your general stress level, let's take a look at what stress does to your body. Stress is defined as the real or perceived threat to your body or your ego. You know, it might be a rhinoceros chasing you or just a feeling of helplessness. It might be a psychological or social stressor such as depression, anxiety, grief, or low socioeconomic status, divorce, loneliness, or even unemployment. Or it might be a physical stressor, such as an infection, anything that triggers inflammation, exposure to cold temperatures, environmental toxins, pain, excessive exercise, smoking, alcohol, or stimulants. Being overweight is a significant stressor. It has an impact on you both physically and psychologically. Being overweight leads to the production of more stress hormones, worsening the dangerous spiral of chronic elevations of these hormones, which cause depression, memory loss, bone loss, heart disease, cancer, and immune diseases. Besides just the physical stress of carrying around those extra pounds and the wear and tear on your joints, the hormonal and immune changes that occur with obesity lead to more rapid aging and degeneration. In addition, you face many social and internal psychological pressures that come from being overweight. Social derision, sexual problems, lack of ability to engage in enjoyable physical activities such as playing with your kids, or shame about having to shop in stores for big men or women. The list goes on and on. Being overweight is an enormous stressor in itself. Now let's consider the brain-gut connection, how the second brain in our stomach makes us fat. Your brain talks to your gut through a second brain, or the enteric or gut nervous system. This is your autonomic or automatic nervous system, and it's made up of two parts. One part, the sympathetic nervous system, is responsible for the stress response. It slows things down, it causes you to store fat, it decreases your metabolism, it increases your blood sugar, it leads to heartburn and reflux where food moves up the digestive tract when it's supposed to go down, and constipation where food stays where it is instead of moving through. The other part is called the parasympathetic nervous system, and it's responsible for the relaxation response. It makes you digest your food, it keeps things going in the right direction, it increases fat burning and lowers your blood sugar. So when you are feeling relaxed and safe, your body is programmed to digest and process food. When you are stressed and in danger, it's not the most opportune time to digest your lunch. Your survival needs focus all your energy on fighting or fleeing from stress or danger, not digesting food. When you are stressed, the part that makes you fat, the sympathetic nervous system, gets turned on and all the signals go haywire. Hunger increases, metabolism slows down, and you gain weight. But that's only part of the story. When you're chronically stressed, you set off a series of hormonal imbalances that complicate the problem even more. When you are introduced to a stressful situation, your body releases a hormone called cortisol. Cortisol is responsible for setting off all the physiological responses associated with stress. Studies have shown that when cortisol is released into the bloodstream, you become less sensitive to leptin, the hormone that tells your brain you're full. So when this happens, you tend to eat more and crave more sugar. That means your body doesn't only slow down your metabolism when you're stressed out, it actually tells you to consume additional calories. The bottom line, being stressed makes you fatter, and the extra fat you put on around your middle, which is also known as VAT or visceral adipose tissue, produces more stress hormones, leading to more fat storage, leading to more stress hormones and more fat, and on the vicious cycle turns. The only way to stop it is to relax. Next, let's look at the role your genes play, the gene stress fat link. Some individuals have a genetic variation that makes it difficult for them to process cortisol properly. Remember, cortisol is one of the hormones your body produces in response to stress. Researchers have found that for some people under chronic stress, the feedback loop to the brain that normally shuts down cortisol production is impaired. These people tend to gain even more weight under stress than the average person does. But there is good news. Even people who have a genetic predisposition to gain weight can have an immense impact on what their genes tell their bodies to do by giving their genes the right kind of information. If you are genetically predisposed to have problems coping with your excess cortisol, I recommend the same thing to you that I do for anyone facing a chronic stress problem. Relax. When you relax, you turn off the genes that cause you to gain weight and turn on the genes that cause you to lose weight. When you relax, your metabolism is turned up. Your fat burning increases, you become more insulin sensitive, and you consequently lose weight. In other words, relaxing is a great weight loss strategy. The problem is that relaxing isn't a natural state. Most of us are used to being stressed out, but we have no idea what it means to relax. Thus, you need to train yourself to relax. There is a way to do it, and right now, you're going to learn how. You can train your body and mind to relax by following this 6-step protocol. Step 1, identify and reduce the causes of stress. Step 2, practice active relaxation. Step 3, eat stress-reducing foods and avoid stress-producing foods. Step 4, use herbs to reduce your stress. 5, use supplements to reduce your stress. And step 6, consider measuring your stress response with testing. So let's look at exactly how you can make this 6-step process work for you. Step 1. Identify and reduce the causes of stress. Generally speaking, there are two kinds of stressors, psychosocial and physical. You know, psychosocial stressors are social or psychological events that cause you to stress. Physical stressors are physical problems that cause your body to stress out. You may not be consciously aware of all the things that are stressing you out in these two areas right now, but it's important for you to take an inventory of the ones you're aware of so you can begin to do something about them. To start with, I would suggest you take out a piece of paper and make a list of the things in your life that are causing you stress. You might fold this piece of paper in half and on one side write psychosocial stressors and on the other, physical stressors. Once you've done this, simply list the things in each column that stress you out. Here are a few common psychosocial stressors to consider: your job, relationship, financial situation, kids, psychological disorders like depression, anxiety, low self-esteem, the state of the world, such as the international political situation, problems in your neighborhood, etc. And here are a few of the physical stressors to consider: being overweight or obese, chronic illness, allergens, toxins, sugar, high fructose corn syrup, trans saturated fats, chronic infections, alcohol, tobacco, and drugs. So once you've made a list of your various stressors, try to think of ways that you might eliminate them. In some cases, this is easy. For example, if you feel as though you drink a little too much in the evenings, it might be a physical stressor for you, drink less. In other cases, it would be more difficult. If you're dealing with a chronic psychological or health issue, for example, it will probably take some energy to get that worked out. But always remember, you can take action to reduce the amount of stress in your life. Step 2, practice active relaxation. Even if you can't eliminate all the stressors in your life, there are ways that you can encourage your body and brain to relax intentionally when you're faced with stressful situations. First, you should practice relaxation consistently if you can. It is important to do this both for your weight and for your health. Try to schedule 2 to 3 30-minute sessions of relaxation exercises per week if you can. Make sure that you are secluded and won't be interrupted during your relaxation periods. Before you get started on any of the exercises, you might want to take a moment to breathe and center yourself. Just take a few deep breaths or use the deep breathing exercises you'll hear in a moment to start this process. In addition, you shouldn't hop right up and get back to your work after your relaxation time is over. This will basically undo most of the progress you've made. Take some time to come out of the exercise and back to your surroundings. Move slowly after you're finished. Feel your body, look around the room, feel how relaxed you are, and then go back to your life. Now that you have some background on how to relax, let's get to the exercises themselves. We will start with the deep breathing exercise because it is foundational and easy to do. Start by getting in a comfortable position. If you're at home, sit in your favorite chair or lie down somewhere comfortable. If you're at the office, sit comfortably in your chair with your feet on the floor, your back straight, and your hands on your lap. You may want to unbutton the top of your pants or loosen your shirt a little. Do whatever you need to make yourself comfortable. When you've done this, close your eyes and begin the relaxation process. Slowly bring your attention to your breathing. Notice how you're breathing. Are you breathing in through your nose or in through your mouth? Are you taking shallow breaths or full, deep ones? Where can you feel the breath in your body? Is it in your chest or your belly? Once you have a sense of your breathing, slowly begin inhaling through your nose and then exhaling slowly through your nose. Don't rush yourself. Don't hyperventilate. Just calmly breathe in and out through your nose. As you do this, try to see if you can breathe deeply into your abdomen. Place your hand on your belly, and as you breathe, make your hand rise and fall. You can place the other hand on your chest if you wish. As you start breathing deeply into your abdomen, you should feel your belly extend more than your chest. Feel your body begin to relax as you breathe deeply. Now when you exhale, think the word relax. Inhale, then exhale. Relax. Inhale, exhale, relax. You can continue this process for 5 to 10 minutes if you wish. Simply focus on breathing into your abdomen and telling yourself to relax. As you do so, feel what happens to your body. Let any places where you feel tension unwind. Let your body feel like a loose rope. Relax physically. Now, when you're ready, slowly bring yourself back to the present moment. Look around the room you're in and gradually go about your day with this new relaxed attitude. Taking saunas or steam baths has also proven very effective in reducing the stress response and creating balance in the autonomic nervous system. They improve circulation, help with weight loss, balance your blood sugar, and improve detoxification. You know, you should note though that though saunas have been used to treat heart disease and diabetes, if you have any chronic health condition, be sure to check with your doctor before starting sauna therapy. Step 3, eat stress-reducing foods and avoid stress-producing foods. Nutritional support is very important in subduing stress. You can improve blood sugar and insulin control by reducing your intake of refined sugars and carbohydrates and by increasing your intake of omega-3 fats, fiber, and specific vitamins such as the B-complex vitamins, zinc, vitamin C, and other antioxidants. Nutrients are also important in helping the sensors for the steroid hormones, such as cortisol, to function properly. These include B6, B12, and folic acid. These vitamins are also important in detoxifying excess adrenaline and cortisol so they can be eliminated from the body. Others that may also be helpful are vitamin B5 or pantothenic acid and vitamin C. You know, potassium and magnesium are also balancing for the adrenal glands, and they are found in dark green leafy vegetables and many fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. Increasing your intake of omega-3 fats from wild fish and whole ground flax seeds or flaxseed oil can reduce inflammation and its negative effects on the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, that central command center for the stress response. Step 4. Use herbs to reduce your stress. If you want to add yet another dimension to your stress reduction program, try these herbal remedies. You can reduce the overactivity and increase the resilience of your system by using adaptogenic, named because they may help you adapt to stress, or balancing herbs in combination or singly. These include ginseng, rhodiola or Arctic root, Siberian ginseng, ashwagandha, which is an Ayurvedic herb, or licorice. Step 5. Use supplements to reduce your stress. There are a few supplements that have been shown to undo the effects of physical stressors. You might try adding the following to your basic supplement regimen: a B-complex vitamin, magnesium, vitamin C, and zinc. Step 6. Consider measuring your stress response with testing. Specific tests can help you identify the health of your stress response. These include the Adrenal Stress Index that helps you identify your stress response over the course of a day. The 24-hour urine cortisol test is also effective, and this measures the stress hormone